$20,000 off, 0% APR for 72 months. It is the 2018 model clearance event at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Our great friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they present the Ira Kaufman podcast and all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com. We have been out to both dealerships. They are fantastic. Of course, the Ed Morse name means more than 70 years of service and commitment to the community across Florida. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they have the new XT4, the beautiful crossover, is available. 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And they have a long list of special offers. It's right there on the homepage of the website. You will be impressed. And of course, the signature showroom at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. General manager Brian Danahy has been on our show. He's a great friend of the podcast and Bucks fans everywhere. And the offers are fantastic. Get to edmorescadillactampa.com. We thank Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for all of their support. You should support them. And here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Ira Kaufman podcast is on the sage. The great sage of Tampa Bay sports is in the house. We are at One Buck Palace, presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Mr. Ira Kaufman is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. And Ira, you are looking great. You are looking sharp. You are in the holiday spirit. It's Buccaneers talk firing through this podcast and much more. How are you, Sage?
We got to shake things up on this podcast, DeKemper, and I'm counting on you to do so. We got a little international flavor on this podcast. Steve will be talking about that later. I'm still peeved. I'm out of the top 50. If I was in it, Isbitz would mention it. He hasn't been mentioning it. I got to be on that hit parade.
I agree with you.
I got to be on the hit parade.
I agree with you. Forget Nancy Grace.
I can't have Nancy Grace ahead of me. I can't have...
Well, you're still ahead of George Stephanopoulos, aren't you?
You know, I can't have Anderson Cooper and Laura Ingram. I can't have these people ahead of me, Steve. It won't fly.
Lorraine.
It will not stand.
Well, Ira, we hope you do get back to the top 50, all genres, all podcasts on Google Play. You've been
gone. Of course,
gone.
That affects my paycheck not a bit. Not one bit.
Not a bit, Ira. Not a bit.
But
speaking of important things.
There you go.
You've been off there for about a month. And now,
thank you, Steve.
Hopefully you'll get back. And there are some big names up there. Don't worry. Glenn Beck is now pushed in there. He's knocked you out and some others. So
that fool?
Not a lot. All right. Now, look, you mentioned international. I know Lee and I both immediately thought you were talking about Inez Sands coming to be to the podcast.
Or at the National Plaza here in Tampa.
Right.
I'd take an Inez Sands. I'm sorry.
I got an Inez Sands story, by the way.
Uh-oh.
By the way.
I got to hear this.
It was one of the early years when they were in Orlando, and I believe they started training camp in Orlando in 02,
which
was Gruden's first year. And I'm going to think it was maybe 03, and it's Bucks reporting day. And we all drive to Celebration, and the Bucks stayed at Celebration Hotel. They took over the whole hotel. Mm-hmm. And we're out there with the reporters, and the Bucks made some players available. They brought them outside the hotel, the players, put up a little backdrop. And, you know, there's this, you know, 20, 25 media and cameras and maybe 100 fans hanging on the ropes. And I look around, and there's Miss Sands. She's wandering around. From what, Telemundo, something like that, Steve? And the more I've thought about it over the years, I think somehow, some way, she got into that hotel to have some kind of a private meeting, and I don't think there was anything on tape or any questions asked. I think there were a lot of things answered, but who knows what went on. But I saw her out there. Why would she be at Buck training camp on the opening day of training camp?
I think she works for TV Azteca, which I don't care.
I think it is Azteca. I think only Lee would know that.
Well, I have no idea where she worked in 2003, which is what this story was. So.
Lee knows her resume.
Well, I have Inez Sands' story as well.
You might have a poster. Never mind the story.
Well, you know where I'm going, but no poster. But when the Bucks hosted a Super Bowl, I didn't say playing one. I said last hosted a Super Bowl, Cardinals Steelers. Great game, by the way. Well, it was media day, and for whatever reason,
that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago.
The NFL, matter of fact, a week and a half after Chucky was fired, if I remember correctly. So, on media day, the NFL, in its infinite wisdom, why I don't know, restricted the 2,000 and some media people to just the Bucks sidelines. just the sidelines, between the goal lines, and it was like it was insane. It was like a mosh pit, like a giant mosh pit. And well, anyway, she was there flaunting her wares as she's wont to do. And, you know, I was taking pictures of everything. And matter of fact, I think I even got a picture of you with the most disgusted look on your face. There were, what do they call those dancers at the Columbia, where they do dancing at
flamenco
the Columbia?
Flamenco dancers.
Flamenco dancers. They had flamenco dancers there.
And, not flamingo. And flamenco. You,
flamenco, not flamingo?
Flamingo is a bird.
I know
like
that.
Flamingo.
Well, anyway.
Steve, what are we going to do with this guy?
So anyway, these dancers were tapping their way.
And I was disgusted.
Oh, my gosh. The look on your face was like, I thought you were going to throw up. You were just glaring at them like, what kind of circus is this? Well, anyway, right at that same day, that very same day, that very same hour, I saw Inez Sands, and I'm taking a picture of her most famous feature. One of her producers saw me. I thought he was going to swing at me. Starts yelling and screaming at me. I'm like, hey, pal, look what she's wearing. What do you think we're supposed to be looking at? Take it easy here.
Steve, we've just done 10 minutes on a woman from TV Azteca. Can we get back to this Buck-centric podcast?
Absolutely, Ira. And that reminded me when Lee was talking, a fan of the podcast and of Joe Buck's fans sent me a picture of you, Ira, mingling with the fans. As you always say, I'm the only journalist who used to do this. He sent me a picture. I'll send it to you. From 2009. And
when I was employed by the Tribune.
Employed by the Tribune. You're wearing an orange shirt and you're talking to fans before the game. Pretty sure.
Is it training camp, maybe?
I don't. That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is I look at this picture and I'm like, Ira hasn't aged a day. And then I'm looking at this like, that's not very good for whatever he was 10 years ago. I'm like, is this good or bad? I don't know. But he looks the same.
That photo of you watching those dancers just absolute disgust on your face.
Let's make sure that never hits the internet over there.
Oh, it did. It did.
Oh, you'd be surprised. The reader email, the pictures of the sage we've got. Unbelievable. All right, Ira, look, we're here at One Buck Palace. It is a Wednesday when we're recording, and I got to hit you with a couple of things, Sage. We later in this podcast, as people saw in the headline, Thomas Bassinger of the Tampa Bay Times will join us in a pre-recorded interview. We have some fun with that, some knowledge, some fun.
Got the picks later on.
Yes. We got our picks coming up, of course. This thing popped. I got to tell you this. I don't know if you saw it or not. But
it was while we were in the locker room. While we were in the locker room, the international
Oh, the international game. We're going to get to that.
Oh, you got
right?
another thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's next year's news in a lot of ways. But this thing really, it upset me so much. I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't wait to ask the Sage.
Got something to do with Michael Flynn or Papadopoulos, or we're off politics?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Right. Papadopoulos.
But, you know, George Papadopoulos.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, Sage, look. You know, I review the Buccaneers Radio Network, all the shows. I listen to them all. I know everything about Justin Watson's family.
And boy, did you get a lot out of the Levante David interview. Well, you guys are unbelievable.
So Levante David's on Monday, and I'm listening to this, and he starts talking to Casey Phillips about how Mark Duffner has put in so much work and changed so many things. And he says, quote, he deserves all the credit for this turnaround. And he talks about Duffner interacting with the players, meeting with all the players together, getting their points of view, position groups, and then putting them together. And then he goes on and says, Levante said, I never had that before. So when I see that, you know, a coach shows that he cares about our opinions and things like that, it's really cool to see. And he goes on, Ira, to say that Duffner puts together the game plan. And after the game plan is crafted, he sits down with Levante David and says, what do you think? Tell me what you don't like. What do we, you know, let's nail this thing down here, and takes his input. And Levante David was implicit, saying that I've never had a coach listen to me before.
Look, Steve.
What do you make of
that?
The
three of us don't want to turn this podcast into a Mike Smith dump fest. We don't want to do that. So instead, we'll just talk up Duffner. Look. I think it's obvious he's brought a fresh energy to the plate. I think it helps that he's on the field during the games. Just that in and of itself is more interaction with the players on a real-time basis as the game's unfolding. I think it's easier to make adjustments in that regard when you're talking to somebody, you know, rather than talking over a headphone to your assistant coaches. You got to give Duffner his due. Now, Steve, having said that, and I understand everything, all the points Levante's making, Lee, I'm going to ask you directly and make this point. I believe Duffner's, the road game that I remember Duffner coaching was the Giants. That was not a very good defensive performance. Mm-hmm. And he said it on Wednesday. And he goes, He goes, Sage, you ask me the same question every week. I said, I'm going to keep asking it to you. Their average opponents are averaging 40 points, Lee. And that's six games, not two games. Mm-hmm. 40 points.
That's not good.
That's outrageous.
On the road.
On the road. Now, look, I'll be the first to say the Ravens' offense doesn't scare anybody. They got Lamar Jackson and a bunch of receivers nobody ever heard of. You know, they got John Brown. Is like
I thought
you know,
he got hung in Virginia.
Yeah, he got hung. You know, a couple other guys know. And they don't have any premier running backs either. Lamar Jackson's leading the team in rushing. Steve, he's only started four games, Lamar Jackson.
Wow.
He's leading the Ravens in rushing.
And we thought it was bad with Jameis.
So that's going to be priority one for the Buck defense is to stop Lamar Jackson's legs. I'm not worried about Lamar Jackson throwing the ball. He hasn't proven to be an adept passer. I don't think he's as good as a natural thrower as a Michael Vick, but he's just as quick as Vick, which is scary. So anyway, as far as Duffner's concerned, I think he still has something to prove. If he holds Baltimore to 20 points or less, I'll be impressed. But they didn't stop Saquon Barkley on the road. They did not.
But he's really good, though.
Big halftime deficit, as they do on the road, big halftime deficit. So Duffner's got something to prove. But as far as Lavonte David's concerned and his remarks, Lee, it seems like Duffner's been a breath of fresh air around here. He's looking at this as a great opportunity for himself, and I think he should.
Duffner or Lavonte David?
Duffner is still a little bitter about his tenure in Cincinnati when he had his shot to run a defense. Maybe their personnel wasn't very good. Look what he's doing with a ragtag secondary.
Yes.
And missing his middle linebacker, you know, and that's not easy. And Beckwith's not available, who I thought could have been a big help if he would have came back in the middle of the season. He really could have helped. So far, so good with Duffner, Lee. But I'm going to withhold judgment till the next two road games when they finish their road schedule against Baltimore and Dallas.
I always go back to Steve brought this up. When Smith was fired, Mike Smith was fired, he didn't see one Bucks defender take the social media and complain or I wish you well or I'm sorry it came to the whatever. Nothing. Crickets. Absolute crickets. And that, you know, sometimes
you
silence
thought that
speaks
was telling.
Loud.
You thought that was telling, yeah.
Yeah, I think that speaks volumes. My 2 points about Duffner. There are some people that still think Duffner has nothing to do with the defensive rebound. This morning being Wednesday morning, I wrote a story, or I published a story. Mike Smith, this year, the five games, is that right, five games that he was defensive coordinator? The best game he had was over 300 yards passing. Every team got 300 yards passing on him, if not more. Every team. Since Duffner took over, no team has 300 yards passing on the Bucks.
That's outstanding. That's research worthy of Tom Bassinger. Outstanding.
Well, here's something that's kind of bizarre, though. And it doesn't.
And by the way, they haven't given up less than 34 points in a road game. 34.
Now, this is kind of weird. This is not a pro-Duffner piece of information. Duffner, when he came in, you know, I'm going to stop the run. And some people scoffed. Like, all right, you're going to stop the run in the passing league. Actually, the per game rushing yards against the Bucks defense is up more than Smith. So Smith was getting a job done running the ball, so to speak, but he got lit up passing.
I'll tell you one
thing. It's just the opposite with Duffner.
Steve, for 2.5 quarters last week, the Saints couldn't run the ball at all. Their first 11 rushes, and I checked this specifically, before the block punt, they had 11 rushing attempts and 5 yards. 11 attempts and 5 yards. They ended up with 100 yards rushing, right, Steve? Fatigue set in, and as Duffner said on Wednesday, they were out of their run fits a little bit and didn't tackle as well. But for a lot of that game, Steve, and the Saints have a robust running game, two-headed monster. Buck rushing defense was fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah, Ira, you know, I'm going to respect your
thank you
sort of wishes here, I guess, based on your answer, that you don't want this to turn into a dump fest and a pile-on fest. Maybe Lee and I will do a little segment when you go. So you have to leave early. But, you know, for me, hearing Lavonte, and I'm not going to dive into this, where is Dirk Cutter? Forget about Mike Smith. He's gone. Where's Dirk Cutter sitting down with McCoy and David and having dinner and saying, guys, come over, let's barbecue here in South Tampa. Show me everything that's wrong with the defense. I don't know. It's mind-boggling. He is still the head coach and still in charge. And
well, I got a question for you, Steve.
Crazy.
On what Lavonte David said. he said no one has ever sat him down and stated, that, hey, you know, what would you like? What do you think works?
He said he's never had a coach who, quote, cares about our opinions and things like that.
Forget Duffner and Cutter, or Mike Smith and Cutter. Everybody that's been here since he's been drafted.
Yep.
I mean, Bobby Knight, and I know, you know, right now it's in vogue to, you know, Bobby Knight's a monster. But Bobby Knight says something. I always told this to my relatives. You know, hey, you could do this.
You,
or you could do that.
You quoted Bobby Knight to your Uncle Morris?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's not there. I always quote Bobby Knight to my relatives. Say, oh, you could do this, you could do that. No, one of my favorite quotes of all time, maybe my favorite quote of all time, is a Bobby Knight quote. Nobody.
I thought your favorite quote was, which one of those 2-yard all-star runs did you like the best? Isn't that your favorite quote over there from Chucky?
No, right. No. Right. My favorite quote, perhaps of all time, but my favorite Bobby Knight quote, and I'm not being facetious when I say this. Nobody knows me better than me. The Bobby Knight quote. It fits perfectly here. Lavani David knows what he can do and he can't do. No one, not Schiano, not Lovey, no one ever went to Lavonte David like, you know, we're going to ask you to do this. What do you think? That just blows my mind. That blows my mind.
Steve, I want to make one quick point before you grab that microphone. It's just a little point and just a little irony, I think. Guys, 2 years ago, the Bucks were 8-5, and they had going on the road for 2 weeks and then had a home playoff game. They controlled their own destiny. They went to Dallas and New Orleans and lost. Playoffs are over. Then they won their last game. So here it is 2 years later. They're not 8-5. They're 5-8. They got 2 road games and a home game. One of them's in Dallas. Same thing. And now they're not fighting for playoffs, but they're probably fighting for Cutter's job. Just a little nugget for you over there, Steve. It's
all
funny,
right, Sage.
How things change.
I thought something extremely profound was coming, but that was interesting. All right, Ira, look, let me hit you with this news of the day. It affects all Bucks fans. I want your Sage take on this as well.
And it affects your 2019 budget in a big way over there. It says you spring for me and DeKemper to both attend this game.
Oh, come on. Don't be ridiculous. Hey, we find out today that the Buccaneers are getting an international game next year, a home game, much like they played in the previous decade in England when they played there twice. And we don't know where this game is going to be, but a home game is coming off the Buccaneers' schedule. We'll find out in the spring where the game is going to be, whether it's in Mexico or Germany, if they're playing one there, or one of the many that are scheduled.
Seven games at Ray J next year.
7 games at Ray J. We learned that it's a trade-off for accepting a Super Bowl, which is coming in February 2021. How do you feel about this? What do you think of this for Bucks fans? You know how this league works. If the Glazers pushed back or kicked and screamed a little bit, things could change. And when I say things could change is that game didn't have to be in 2019. Could have been 2021 where they accepted the international game as part of the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, it was probably going to have a new coach next year. It's a strain on a franchise, strain on a new coach. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I thought of was, can you imagine DeKemper at Buckingham Palace? I mean, that you can't get around that. You absolutely can't get around that. That in itself is worth the sidebar. But as far as losing a home game, Lee, let's be perfectly honest. We've seen the attendance, especially the last couple of home games. And I don't care who the opponent is. I don't care that it was the 49ers and they don't travel. Who cares? You got to fill it with your own fans. The weather was no factor against Carolina. Weather's no factor. So I don't think the Glazers are pushing and screaming about giving up a home game at this point. Of course, they own Manchester United. They're not giving up that team. Mm-hmm. They're a cash cow, as are the Bucks. You can't lose money as an NFL owner.
You got to really try, yeah.
You know, even baseball. Even Sternberg ain't giving up the race, and there's a good reason. He's making a lot of money. So, look, the Bucks. I think the game likely to be in London. Doesn't necessarily have to be in Wembley. Could be in Tottenham. But there's connections, you know, with the soccer team. There's all kinds of marketing entanglements. Now, for a while, the Bucks were playing every year overseas. We thought that was going to be a regular thing before Khan from Jacksonville came in there and said, now, wait a minute. We want to be the team that goes there every year. Okay, have at it.
Well, there was pretty much nasty backlash from Bucks fans, wasn't there? I mean, it was really Bucks fans were really getting fed up with
that. You know,
that.
Because, Steve, if you're doing it every year, you're at a competitive disadvantage. If you're part, Steve, if you're part of the circle where everybody, you know, gets their shot and got to do it, that's fine. That's a level playing field, Lee. But if you do it 5 years in a row, you've given up five home games. Mm-hmm. This team plays a lot better at home, at least this year. They're 4-3 as opposed to 1-5. So, look, Lee, are we surprised that the Bucks are giving up a home game and going to play overseas? No. What does it mean? It's probably not good news for the Tampa Bay Times travel budget for 2019. They're going to have to send a couple of people over there.
Looks like I might have to break down and get a passport.
And that's where Fan Retreat comes in. Get your tickets. Get your overseas tickets on those London flights, Steve, and get them early.
I'm actually happy for some of the fans because I know that this means cheaper tickets next year. I know there's the hardcore fan who goes to 8 games a year. But for the ones who go to 6 or 7, hey, if you're just giving me 7, I'll save
$1,000. Not a bad point.
I'll save $1,000, and I'm only going to 6 or 7 anyway. So, but for the people who really ache for those home games, and of course the workers who make money on those home games, it sucks, and it's the way it is.
The Bucks have not fared particularly well overseas either, right, Steve?
Have they ever won a London game?
They lost to the Pats. They lost to the Bears. Have they won one?
They haven't fared well in general. This is the losingest franchise.
No, thank you for providing perspective.
I might have to break down and get a passport. I don't have a passport. Never been overseas.
I'd like to tell Isbits right up front, I have a passport, and it's good for the next 6 years.
So, oh, wow. Now,
so I'm ahead of the Kemper on the pecking order.
If they're playing in Germany, I'm there. Seriously.
Well, all it says is overseas.
We don't know where.
4 games in London?
5. Or? Well, yeah. 4 games in London.
4 in London and 1 in Mexico City.
Now, here's the... There's only 2 countries in Europe I have any desire to see: Germany and Italy. Other than that, I don't give a damn.
And wherever in a sense that happens.
Well, that's the other side of the equator.
All right, Lee. Final thoughts on the international game. You know, we know where you want to go. We know where you don't want to go. But as far as the effect, the competitive disadvantage, which it really is, when you ditch a home game to go fly overseas, and I think, as I said to Ira, odds are it's going to be a new head coach who's still figuring out processes and schedules and all that stuff. I think it's a disadvantage, and it's not a good thing. Of course, if you win, it's fantastic.
Imagine playing 9 road games. Or excuse me. Yeah, 9 road games instead of 8. Coaches would go nuts. And then, well, this road game's going to be abroad somewhere. No, not that abroad. The overseas or maybe in Mexico. There's no competitive advantage, not even for the home team, quote unquote, which the Bucks are. So, aside from what you say, and it's all valid, it's just a rotten deal. But you know what? The Bucks get a Super Bowl, and there'll be all kinds of things to do during the Super Bowl. Fans will have fun with that, but it just stinks, you know, for the common shot in a beer guy who, you know, I think of, and I say this in all due respect, I think of Port Richie Lou, where he squirrels away money, you know, where he admits that he, you know, use that money for his family, use that money for his house, use that money for all sorts of things. But he makes sure he has, you know, those extra shekels tucked away so he can go to Bucks games, and this is his thanks.
You know, some will like it, some won't, but it's just not a good thing. Although, I think we can all look forward to watching the game, and I'm sure Hooters will have an incredible event. Breakfast, because those games, you know, of course,
yes.
If you play in England, you're at 9:30 in the morning. So a huge breakfast event, nice day to finish early, watch some football. So I'm kind of looking forward to that angle of it, although it might be in Mexico City, where if you go there, you can't breathe. I know that's the stereotype, but
just breathe, you might not be able to return.
The air quality there is horrendous many times, so that's not a place that you'd want to go, Lee.
Well, didn't Belichick just rip the place apart?
I don't remember if it was Belichick or not. But
I was saying it was Belichick. He usually doesn't go against the league. He really sounded off on the Mexico City game. I think they played there last year. He really went off on it.
All right, now, Ira stepped away. He had to go. We're putting this podcast together in pieces, so you will hear Ira in just a few minutes when we get to our interview with Tom Bassinger, and, of course, our picks are coming up, and Ira's closing address to Bucks fans. So he's gone, but he's not really gone as far as the podcast world goes. And, of course, the podcast is available on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. You can subscribe. We appreciate all the listeners. Lee, you and Ira did a great job after the game. And I know a lot of people tuned into that, and we're fired up for the excitement forthcoming. You know, I know, Lee, Ira didn't want to get into this with Lavonne David's comments, but you and I both know that's just disgusting that the coaches weren't they had a bye week to figure out how awful this defense was, let alone coming off finishing the 32nd rank the year before. You don't sit down and really listen and at least have the guys feel like you're listening and considering your veteran players. I mean, McCoy, David, they've been playing for years. Bad.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? Yeah, when I talk to people outside the Tampa Bay area, obviously people that are not involved in media in any way, much less NFL media, and, you know, they kind of ask me what's it like, you know, what are the players like, what are the coaches like, things of that nature. And specifically when it comes to coaches, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but I tell these guys, I said, you have no idea how much ego is involved. I said, you really have no idea. And this is another example. I mean, another good word, and some people might have to use their Google, whatever Google app they have available, chutzpah is something Ira would say. Just the nerve that the defense was so bad, and they don't, not just Mike Smith, not just Dirk Cutter, but when Lavonnie David said, no, never a coach is asked for his input. You know, that goes all the way back to Shannon. That's just, I mean, that's unthinkable. But it goes back to ego. Like I say, I told people, matter of fact, I told a cousin of mine one time, you know, he was asking about NFL or football. I think baseball was involved. I said, never underestimate the egos involved in major league sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the commish, Justin Pulaski, on his Bucks Uncensored podcast, I thought he made a point that it seems obvious, but it's really, really hits home. As commish said, this was Lavonnie David, seventh year in the league. The guy has seen it all. He's a respected player. You may not think he's a pro bowler, but he's an excellent player who's seen it all. You're not going to tap this guy in his third year in the system to, hey, what's working, what's not, and really sit him down. It's just sad.
Well, you hit the key word, respect. Do you disrespect the guy that much with his resume that you don't even try to gauge his 2 cents worth? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Now, here we are at $1, as we mentioned, and we're going to give our picks later, of course. But, Lee, is there something you're looking for specifically in this game for the Bucks on the positive side, okay? Whether Dirk Cutter lives or dies or not, I mean, we all know probably what's coming here. But on the field, what do you want to see from this Bucks that'll encourage you on Sunday?
Well, it was sparked by off the field, if you can believe it. On the field Sunday, I want to see if Donovan Smith can rebound. And I've not been, like many people, been anti-Donovan Smith from day one. I've actually tried to give them the benefit of the doubt. I've been fortunate, and you have as well, talk to NFL people, even Bucks people, and they'll say, hey, he may not be an all-pro, but here are his attributes. Okay, fine. Tuesday night on Twitter, and forgive me, I don't remember his name. His first name, I think, is Che. You know who I'm talking about. He works for Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
He's a producer for their radio show, which is available on SiriusXM. And he does a really cool job of taking all 22 and highlighting certain plays, negative or positive, that he notices in the Bucks game, which is really cool. And we've both used them as a basis for a post or two. Well, last night, and I've heard Bill Belichick talk about this. I've heard Jason Light talk about this. What you and I may see, and I shouldn't say you and I, what any football fan would see on tape of an offensive lineman, what we may think is a mistake or a blown coverage is the exact opposite. Someone else blowing their coverage. And that drives NFL people bananas, and that's why they hate, one of the reasons I should say, but that's a main sticking point with what a lot of NFL people hate with Pro Football Focus. They're just going off on raw tape. They don't know the assignments. They don't know the line calls, all that stuff. Well, Che was critical of Donovan Smith on a particular play or two, and unfortunately for Che, he used the word effort. You want to get an NFL player hacked off, you tell him he's mailing it in. They go, but, and I understand that. It's pride. It's respect. Donovan Smith went nuts. I don't know if he saw it on Twitter or someone pointed it out to him. He went bananas and just tore into the guy. Well, today in the locker room, one of the Bucks media representatives started walking up to Donovan Smith, and Donovan was walking out of the locker at the time, and he glared at the guy. He said, "Don't get me on Twitter. Don't you get me going on Twitter." And he had a couple of colorful four-letter words as he walked out the door. So I assume the players are ordered not to engage fans on Twitter the way Donovan did. Donovan basically told me, Che, that he was an SOB and that he should never put film up because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Interesting, interesting. And when you said Bucks Media, you...
Media Relations, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, that, I wasn't clear on that.
Yeah, representative of Bucks Media Relations started walking up to Donovan, and before this guy could get a word out, Donovan, I mean, glared at him, just absolutely glared at him. He goes, don't bring up Twitter, don't get me going on Twitter now.
The game has changed because fans have access to the All-22, and things can't be lied about in the same way or hidden, and I'm not calling anybody a liar, but... sometimes the proof is out there. I think the challenge with Donovan Smith here, Lee, is let's say at the end of this season, if the Bucks hierarchy, whoever that may be, mm-hmm. looks at Donovan Smith and says, you know what? This guy is the epitome of an average NFL starter. He's up, he's down, he's durable, he's this, you know, six positives, six negatives, and he's like right down the middle. Like, hey, you know what? Smith's number 15 in my book. The question becomes, guys are either paid like starters or they're not paid like starters. And that's a big gap. The question becomes is, do we want to pay this guy top dollar because he's average and we feel comfortable? Or do we want to say, hey, you know what? I think we can find a better value, because you know these GMs are all about value. It becomes a tough spot. And what never really gets talked about too much, because the Bucks are always buying a bunch of free agents to fill holes, is if you manage your roster right and you let a guy like Donovan Smith walk, you know, you're going to get a compensatory draft pick coming back, which these GMs, you know, have are very aroused by if they get a third or fourth round pick, but there's no guarantee. So I don't know. He's going to be a sticky point, but I agree with you. I'd like to see him bounce back and play good.
Well, to your point about, you know, whoever comes in and their evaluation of Donovan Smith, it reminds me of what we just spoke about, ego. That's why I was told Myron Lewis stuck around as long as he did. It's very famous now that Mark Domenech, the former Rockstar general manager, shortly after he drafted Myron Lewis, sniffed him out like, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. This guy, he's just happy with a check. He doesn't give a damn about football. But every coach he had, Domenech being every coach he had, defensive coach, told him, oh, I can fix this guy. It's not unlike what we hear about Jameis. If a guy comes in, a prospective new coach, and he says, oh, I can work with Jameis, I can correct this, it's going to be the same thing with Donovan Smith. We all know that he's inconsistent. Hell, even the Bucks admit he's inconsistent. So whoever the new coach is or the new offensive line coach, oh, I can fix Donovan Smith. They'll be an ego thing. Oh, I can take care of him. Don't worry about him.
Oh, there's so much ego. I mean, you and I have stories we can't share about, gosh, I had somebody in this building swear to me, gosh darn it, they're going to get a fourth round compensatory pick with Glennon and this and that. So, yeah, right. And meanwhile, I had talked to Scott Pioli about compensatory picks at an owner's meeting a few years back, and he swore that I couldn't repeat anything he said. But, I mean, he just sort of painted a picture of that, you know, you can't play that game unless you're really at the upper echelon of roster building and flexibility.
Like a Belichick. Well, I wrote a story earlier this week, and I pointed that out about Lovey. Lovey made so many terrible misjudgments on player evaluation, and I'm convinced, and I'll tell anybody this, the Bucks are still trying to climb out of the hole he dug, because it's a domino effect. If you don't think player X is any good, you let him go, even though he can play, for whatever reason you let him go, well, that's another draft pick you got to spend and or money you have to spend to buy a player that could have been used elsewhere on another position. In other words, Lovey came in, basically was a jackhammer for his defense, and they've yet to pave that road again.
You wrote that story about defense, and it goes back to the ego thing and the evaluation. You know, it's a combination of evaluation as well, but... hey, look, when Donald Penn was released, he wasn't washed up. They didn't have to do it, but they did it anyway. Somebody sat around saying, Anthony Collins, we're going to upgrade and we're going to do better, and I've studied this and I want my guy. And that busted out, and that led to Donovan Smith, and maybe you don't
second-round pick.
And here we are. You don't draft him, and the circus goes around.
You could have used it on a wide receiver. They didn't, didn't need the money for DeSean Jackson. You could use that for a cornerback, or it goes on and on.
Yeah,
and on.
You can play that game 100 different ways, but it is real when you start to break it down, and that's what creates the resume of a general manager. And I'm sure in the coming weeks we'll be talking a lot more about the GM and evaluating how this roster really was this year as we see the last few games play out. All right, let's get to the Sages back. We've got the interview. Tom Bassinger of the Times. I'm in it. Lee's here. We're all rolling on. We got our picks later. Hang with us. All right, Sage, look, as promised, Thomas Bassinger of the Tampa Bay Times is here. Did I pronounce your name right, Tom?
You did.
You know, when people read your name in the paper, you never really know how it's pronounced. So
Give us your Twitter handle, Mr. Bassinger.
Yeah, it's Thomas Bassinger, not Basinger, not Behringer, Bassinger, Bassinger. I can't even get my own name right.
But Tom Behringer would be a nice salary to have, right?
It would. I'd take that salary. I'm at Tometrics, Tometrics.
All right, there you go. Now, I'm actually glad you're here today. Surprise guest, because I was reading something you wrote the other day, and I had a personal beef.
Oh, we love personal beefs.
Yeah, well, we're all about personal beefs. Right in there, Tom, it said that nobody predicted the Bucks to beat the Saints on opening day, and I was screaming about that for months. So I am the one person, and so I
can't. Well, generally speaking, I think Tom's right on that one. You got to say, in general terms, he's on safe ground over there.
All right, I just had to get that out of the way.
I remember before that game, everybody was talking about how the Bucks needed to keep Drew Brees and the Saints on the sidelines. They needed to run the ball, shorten the game. And, you know, look, I didn't expect the Bucks to do this, but they did. You know, I was advocating for them to pass, air it out, throw on first down, attack the Saints defense. Don't be afraid, especially early in the season. A team's still trying to gel. But they came out, they did it. They matched them blow for blow, and 48-40. Who saw that coming besides you?
With a backup quarterback.
Of course. Ira, before I clear out to your sage wisdom and interview prowess, I just got one question for Tom.
No beef.
I just have one question because we don't have a ton of time. You know, the guys at the Tampa Bay Times, they work for a living, not like you, Ira. You just hang out and schmooze and stuff.
We're busy, Ira.
Tom, you know, you have been covering the Bucs how many years now?
About 5 years now.
5 years. So you've had a full study of Dirk Cutter, the podium man and the personality. What really strikes you about Dirk? And, you know, obviously his time might be coming to an end here. What have you enjoyed about him, or what's intrigued you? I know you guys have had squared off a couple of times.
He's direct, and he likes direct questions. The one thing that I appreciate about Dirk, and sometimes it comes at the expense of other people and sometimes myself, is how plainly he answers questions sometimes. You know, what'd you see about the field goal? What'd you see about the extra point? It went through the uprights. You know, hey, the Saints are practicing with a wet ball this week. What do you think? Yeah, good for them. That's something. If this doesn't pan out down the stretch here and into next season, that kind of commentary I'm going to miss.
He also doesn't make excuses, Tom. He's not big on. He never talks about injuries, what they can't do with injuries. A lot of coaches use that as a crutch.
Something else that stood out to me, you know, even going back to the Doug Martin issue and suspension, you know, he will defend his players. He will cover for them. You know, he doesn't throw his guys under the bus, and I'm sure the locker room appreciates that.
You know, that's why, Steve, when he makes a remark like he did a few weeks back with Mike Evans with the first Carolina game, it stands out. Now, part of it, I think, is he picks on a guy that he thinks can take it. He's not going to take it on do it for a weak-minded individual. So that's to Mike Evans' credit, and Mike Evans has bounced back nicely since. But have you noticed, Tom, that on the few occasions he will say that a guy didn't play particularly well, he picks the spots?
I'd agree with that. And going back to Mike is somebody who all of us here have spoken to him a number of times. He's very determined. He's not satisfied with just being one of the best in the game right now. He wants to be one of the best of all time. So, you know, when Cutter up there makes a critical remark about Mike, I'm sure that Mike can take it. And, you know, it does carry some extra weight. Your ears perk up when
I want to stay on Evans for a second.
Do whatever the hell you want. It's your podcast.
Yeah, it is my podcast. Tom, staying on the Evans thing, what are one or two of things that you think have prevented him from going to the very, very top level with Antonio Brown and Julio Jones? To me, he's in the second group. What separates that first group from the second group?
It might be that he has a lot more contested catches than I think those guys have. He doesn't seem to get, you know, he's not a slow receiver by any stretch.
But
he just doesn't seem to get right. He just doesn't seem to get the separation. Maybe he's not quite as twitchy as those guys. You know, it has something to do with, you know, the other personnel on the field and maybe defenses can roll coverages to his side a little bit more. But in general, I'd say he just doesn't quite get the separation that those other guys get.
Sage, I'll answer that for you, and I'm going to speak for Lee, who I think might give the same answer. You know what separates him? He plays for a loser. He doesn't get the hype, and fans buy into the hype. Media buys into the hype. Sometimes offensive coordinators buy into the hype. He doesn't have the hype, but if you really, I think, broke down all the film of all these guys, there's not a lot that separates him.
Well, yards per catch, too. Yards after catch. He's a little short of the Antonio Browns and the Julio Joneses of the world. A little short.
You know, he doesn't benefit from that, you know, and a lot of that is the Bucs offense. We've seen him in the past kind of go to the ground a little early after catches.
Maybe the ball doesn't get there on time.
Right, Tom. Right. You know, we've seen, I think, a little bit more in these past few games from Jameis, I think, you know, maybe with the exception of last weekend, is that Winston's hitting guys a little bit more in stride than he has in the past. So I think that's part of it too. Is Winston's, you know, pinpoint accuracy, but in general, yeah, you're right. Too many contested catches, not getting the yards after catch.
Lee, you got a question for
Tom? Just said a sentence you don't hear too often, whether it be locally, whether it be nationally. Pinpoint accuracy in the same sentence with Jameis, and you're not using the word inability. Has he improved that much of his accuracy?
You know, I'd say in the San Francisco game and the Carolina game were two of the best games I think I've ever seen Winston play, and not just from a decision making standpoint, but you know, he was hitting guys in stride, and you know, I think for Jameis to take that next level, for this receiving core, this offense to go to the next level. You know, I think that's what they need to do a little bit more often. Hard to be perfect.
Yeah. You're a numbers guy, and that's why I like about you. It's a fresh perspective for a newspaper. You know, Steve and I, all three of us, we're ex-newspaper guys, and I guess Steve and I went through the dark side 10, 11 years ago. But at any rate, it's fresh.
I went unwillingly.
Involuntarily.
Now you're on the dark side.
Now I'm on the dark.
Yeah. Anyway, you don't see a whole lot of analytics in newspapers. And I think that's one reason why there are certain analytics sites that have done so well, because it's different than what newspapers have done. You're an exception. You and the Times are an exception, the Tampa Bay Times. What do the numbers tell you with Cutter being aggressive, whether it be, you know, third or, you know, the fourth and shorts? That's a big topic of conversation now in the NFL, is going for it on fourth downs.
You know, thank you first. And second, you know, to the numbers guy point, you know, really, first and foremost, I consider myself a why guy. You know, what's really happening here is what I ask. And, you know, as much as I like digging into the film, you know, I also like to look at the numbers to see whether numbers support what I'm seeing on film.
Mm. Hey, I got to cut you off. When you said why guy, I was
white
thinking
chromosome?
I was like, is this a new classification that I don't know about yet? I really paused for a minute, but I get it. A Y as
generation.
W-H-Y. Got it.
But as far as Cutter's aggressiveness, you know, I think sometimes it comes down to opportunities. And in the past, we've seen that the Bucs, of course, are a very aggressive offense vertically. They don't throw on third down. They don't throw short of the sticks too often. So in the past, we haven't seen too many opportunities for the Bucs to go for it on fourth and short. This year, I think we've seen there's been maybe about 10 or so, and they've gone for it. They've gone for it just about every time, and they've been quite successful. I think converting 80% or so. So I think we could be seeing the Bucs following that larger trend throughout the NFL. But it really comes down to just having those opportunities. And, you know, what I wonder is whether we'll see more teams play as though they have four downs and not just three. Mm-hmm. You know, might they play third down a certain way knowing that they'll go for it on fourth down?
Okay.
That, you know, I think that's what the Eagles do a little bit. That's not so much what this team does. It's just purely a matter, I think, of chance sometimes, whether they're in a fourth and short
now,
situation.
I've got a question for our guest here, Mr. – and it's a good one. Tom, Tom, we need a little guidance. I need a little guidance. I'm not going to speak for these two. Why would you? There's a site out there that's popular among pro football media. Not all the media, but quite a bit of the media. Maybe some of our listeners also. And I want to get your opinion. I don't know that much about it. I need you to lecture me a little bit. Pro Football Focus. Do you buy in totally? Do you use it in bits and pieces? What's your overview of the site? Is it useful?
Yeah, I'd say in general, yes, it's useful. It's a site I consult quite often. I'm one of those spreadsheeter types, Ira. Sage.
Do you trust the people that are contributing to the site?
You know, I've had a number of interactions with those people, and they know football. The grades, you know, I look at the grades. I don't 100% buy into those, but I use them as guidance. You know, but you know, they're really useful in tracking some other things besides grades. You know, offensive line pressures allowed,
blitz percentages,
kinds of things, play action percentages. What the service that they do is they go beyond looking at yards and yards per carry, those kinds of things, and delve a little bit deeper. And that's what the folks at Pro Football Focus do.
I'm leery, Tom, of the grades in this regard, because sometimes you don't know what the player's assignment was on that particular play. That makes me leery, and I'll tell you why. Personally, and I learned this when I was covering for UPI in my early years, you know, somebody gets beat for a touchdown, the corner or the safety's the last guy that comes over, and then I'm writing my story in real time when the game ends. I'm pressing a button, and I'm saying so-and-so got beat. And then I realized, you know, very quickly thereafter, you shouldn't write that until you find out and go downstairs and what's going on. Just because the guy's the last guy, you know, in the end zone is the guy's crossing the goal line. That's dangerous. So you got to watch out for stuff like that.
Absolutely. That's maybe not everybody else thinks this way, but when they read my work. But I kind of consider it a rough draft. And sometimes after going back and watching the film, you know, I'll change my mind, you know, and I'll own up to something that I'm thinking
about.
We're
still waiting for his bits to own up. I think he did it in 2011, maybe in April of 2011.
Oh, I thought he cut you a check already.
Forget that check. All right, what do you got for him?
It's a numbers question, but I don't have the numbers. That's why I'm asking you. You probably follow NFL Matchup on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL Films does the breakdowns and the stats, et cetera. They put a graphic out this morning. I don't remember it offhand, but it was like first down runs. The teams that are successful in first down runs, Bucks were among the worst, if not the worst. They were terrible. Now, I know there's a perception out there. I've never broken down the numbers, but I know there's a perception out there with Bucks fans that Cutter has a habit of running up the middle on first down. I don't know if that's accurate or not. If that is, what does that tell you about the Bucks' inability to run on first down? I mean, does that tell you just the run game stinks, or that teams are, like as fans would suggest, teams are expecting Cutter to run on first down?
I'm not sure they've run it any better on second or third down, Tom.
The run game stinks.
Thank you, Tom.
It just flat out stinks.
Thank you, Tom.
And that's
this is 3 years running. This is 3 years.
You know, and you have to wonder at this point about this team's ability to draft running backs.
Yes.
Or drafting and developing offensive linemen. You know, credit for them finding Ali Marpet, who might be, I'd say, maybe the best draft pick of the Jason Light era.
Mm.
But as a whole, that the offensive line just isn't run blocking well enough. Now, they are one of the teams that pass the most on first down.
Okay.
I believe they're in the top 10.
Okay.
But given their struggles running the ball, that percentage should probably be even higher.
Mm.
And we saw them try to strike a balance on first down against the Saints this past weekend, and it just didn't work.
All right. Well, I wanted to say a few things before we say goodbye, Tom. First, thanks for coming. I wasn't trying to insult you with having you say your name, because Ira bungles everybody's name.
So everybody.
I wanted it
up
front.
We bungle his name.
What your name was before Ira bungled it. And I want to let the readers know that...
Like Daryl Revis? You mean like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we could go on and on.
I'm guilty of that, too.
I want to let the listeners know that Tom is not wearing a pocket protector. He does not have laptops on his back at all times.
No green visor. Like an accountant in the 30s.
He's a real person, a real... And you're a football fan outside of your coverage of the Bucks, of course. People should know that, you know, outside of the Bucks and stuff. But I did want to say, and I think we'll all miss this, and I have a request. First, I just wanted to say, the candid Cutter that we enjoy, I really was aching to see if he would really do that and continue it if the Bucks ever got onto a national stage where people were really paying attention to Dirk Cutter around the country. I think it would have been fascinating, because that Mike Evans story that you referenced would have been a big deal nationwide. Oh, Cutter's taking a shot at Mike Evans. But nobody cared, except for guys like us. And go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, he gets a lot of criticism for, especially during the losing streak, for saying things like, when asked whether he had a message for the team after a loss, and saying, look, I didn't have a message. You know, if I had the answers, you know,
I'd implement them. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, I know, you know, when a team's losing, you know, people want accountability. They want somebody to have the answers. But sometimes you just don't. And rather than somebody pretend that they do, I'd rather them come right out and say, look, I don't have the answers right now. We're going to go back to the film. We're going to keep grinding. We're going to see this thing through. That's what happens when coaches are losing. There's no answer that they could give that could satisfy anyone.
Absolutely. And my one request was, since it's that time of year, Ira, throwing this out to you, Tom, I think a great story for the Times would be defensive head coach's success versus offensive head coach's success, as we all get in candidate mode. Just my
what makes you think TB is not working on that story right now?
I don't know. I have no access, Ira. I'm just throwing it out there. I would like to read that.
You know, what I like the most.
And I don't want to do the work, so that's
what I like the most about Tom, and maybe the only thing I like about Tom, is I watch him in the locker room. I watch him. He doesn't run with the pack. A lot of people run with the pack. You know, there's three guys that talk every Wednesday, and then that's you get the sound bites. But watching Tom, you know, mostly, you know, he's talking to some of the Buck interns. But when he's not talking to the Buck interns, he's getting his own stuff. And sometimes from people that don't normally talk, and he sometimes gets some nice nuggets out of them. So I like the independence of this man. And I think he's got a bright future in this profession over there, Steven.
Hey, Tom, you're going out with an official Sage endorsement. That is impressive. All right, Ira, there was a little departure from our usual, bringing in Tom Bassinger. You gave him the priestly blessing from the Sage. That was very nice of you as he embarks on his journalism career. Not that he's a young kid, but he's younger than we are. So we wish him well and appreciate his time. So we're going to get right to the picks, Ira. Buccaneers at the Ravens. I read your column on Wednesday, and every Bucks fan should, at joebucksfan.com. You were pretty harsh and pretty clear.
I was.
So I already know what your situation is, so I'll go first, then we'll throw it to Lee.
Now, you're boasting a 10-3 record at this moment, so you got a lot of credibility in this regard.
I'm 10-3. You are 8-5. Lee is 7-6. And I'm going to have to go, unfortunately, 24-17 Ravens. The Ravens are allowing 18.5 points a game. It's a tough spot. It's a 3-4 defense. They're very aggressive. Rough weather, the road. They play. Their defense is even better at home. I don't see a miracle coming from the Bucs here.
But you see a competitive effort.
But I see a very competitive game and just one of those games, 24-17. Lee?
You took the score out of my mouth, so I'll go 27-24 Ravens.
Sage?
I just don't like this matchup. I think physicality is going to be the key. JPP said on Wednesday in the locker room, this is going to be a very, very physical game. We'll see if we're up to it. I don't think the Bucks will be. I believe it will be 24-7. This is another game, continuation of the second half of the Saints game where the Buck offense spins its wheels. Baltimore's defense, Steve, is that good? Terrell Suggs is 36. He's playing like he's 26. 24-7. Baltimore.
24-7. All right, I'll make the stakes a little interesting, Ira. 24-7, that ends up to 31. If that's the final score, I'll give you $31. How about that?
You know, you can't beat that, Lee. You just can't beat it. That will go towards my deductible for my next car.
I feel like Monty Hall, you know? I just had a Monty Hall flashback for a second. All right, Ira, the good folks of Tampa Bay, send them out of here with some wisdom, Buccaneers wisdom, as they need heading into week 15.
This message is probably going to resonate with a lot of Buck fans at this point. First of all, don't believe any nonsense about playoff aspirations. The computers have spit out all the combinations, and the Bucks are at 1%. One. Even if they win out, they're behind in some tiebreakers. They're behind in some tiebreakers. Teams like the Giants, the Redskins that beat the Bucks. So forget it. Forget about that postseason stuff. My message is that a loss Sunday, which I fully expect, will guarantee, unfortunately and sadly, another losing season in Tampa Bay. And I think it will guarantee Dirk Cutter's departure. I think it will be written in stone by Sunday evening.